Hello, it's Anna Hill here with the Farming Today podcast. Today, are arable farmers facing such a tough time that crops aren't enough to make their businesses profitable?
If the price that you're being paid for the crop is below the cost of actually growing it, then there isn't any margin to run a farming business.
We'll have more on that a little later. First, though, this week sees two farming conferences in Oxford, the Oxford Farming Conference and the Oxford Real Farming Conference. Charlotte will be presenting from both tomorrow. This year, the OFC theme is growing resilience. So we're looking at examples of resilience on the farm, whether that's financial, environmental or even personal, the well-being of farmers themselves. And it's well-being we're focusing on today. Nancy Nicholson reports from Scotland on a new movement that's helping farmers prioritise their physical and mental health.
Through you come and just watch your step here.
Right, well, I'm following Jock Gibson through the cattle sheds on his upland farm in Murrayshire. A far cry this cold winter's morning from the dreaming spires of Oxford, Jock. But you've put the conference theme of resilience at the very heart of your business, haven't you? And it's about your personal well-being.
Absolutely. I think key to the success of our business is how we also look after ourselves so that when we're operating at our best self, our businesses are also able to operate at their best potential.
You're one of the founder members of Farmstrong Scotland. Now, what is it?
So Farmstrong Scotland came about as a result of a tour by a Kiwi farmer, Doug Avery, talking about his story to do with depression, and out of that, how he built his inner resilience. As a wash up from that tour, he suggested looking at Farmstrong in New Zealand, which at that time had been going for about 4 or 5 years. So we started looking at that model and what it would take to bring it over here and apply it to a Scottish farming and crofting audience.
So what sort of things are we talking about, Jock?
Key to well-being is looking at the five ways to well-being, and that's things like connecting with people, learning, taking notice, keeping active as well is a really important thing. And then we look at specific topics as well in addition to that. And that's based on the survey that we put out to farmers and crofters to see where there is a need. And so that might be on sleep. We've done a really successful campaign recently on the menopause. So it's things like that as a needs basis to really target people.
Is there a need for another organisation? I'm sure you'll say yes, another organisation when there's already support in different ways across the community. I'm thinking about things like the farming charities and also the regular agencies.
Absolutely. I think what a lot of these charities do is intervene in a moment of crisis. And what Farmstrong is trying to do is to help farmers and crofters help themselves so that they don't get to that crisis point.
We're standing here looking at all your Highland cattle or Highland cross cattle all munching very happily and comfortably on silage when it's really pretty cold outside. But what do you do to look after your own personal well-being?
For me, learning is a big part. Getting out, taking dogs for a walk is really important. We're having conversations now that I would never imagine we would have had even 5 years ago. Our chair, John, and I talk regularly about stuff that's, maybe not going quite so well or we're struggling with. It's amazing just the conversations that, particularly as men, that we just aren't used to having traditionally, and we now almost given ourselves permission to have.
Jock Gibson there with Nancy Nicholson. The rapid expansion of large solar farms in many parts of the country has caused consternation among many people in the countryside who, although supporting green energy, are protesting at the scale of the developments. In Norfolk, the countryside charity CPRE held an exhibition for local people so they could see maps of solar farms in the planning process. The solar farms go through something called the Nationally Significant Infrastructure Project process, rather than the local planning authority. Campaigners say that means people feel they have little chance to object. Now CPRE Norfolk is forming an alliance of local councils and protest groups to provide support in opposition to the projects. I went along to the exhibition in Dereham Memorial Hall to hear from local people.
We live on the edge of site 8B, and we will be looking at a 60-foot high wall of solar panels if it goes ahead.
You say 60-foot high?
Yeah, because the field concern is on a slope. So there's a 14-metre drop between the top of the field and the bottom. You add a 4.5-metre high solar panel, that's 18.5 metres at 60 feet.
We built this retirement bungalow. We can't sell it. Nobody would buy it. What do we do now? You know.
I'm part of Highgrove Opposition Group. We will be losing arable land, which is the best, most versatile land.
But the government would say they would limit the amount of panels built on best and most versatile land.
Well, I would actually totally disagree with that statement, because Norfolk is mainly full of best, most versatile land. It's mainly known for its agriculture. Where is our food going to come from in the future?
I've got a group of students here from Eastern College, which is the local agricultural college here in Norfolk, based just outside Norwich. What's your general view?
I don't think using agricultural land is probably the most beneficial way to use solar. So whether you do it sort of in a more urban environment or on larger, say, warehouses that you see sort of spread out across the countryside, I think that's sort of the way to do.
The government would say that less than 1% of the land in the UK is going to be used for solar panels. It's not much, is it?
Earlier they have the Solar Queue talk in there, and they were pointing out, it's like, I think it was like in Lincolnshire, it's like 12% of that agricultural land is being used for solar panels. And I think that really does make a significant impact, being over 12 times the expected amount.
We've been joined now by Tim O'Riordan, who's the former president of CPRE Norfolk. Tim, farmers are offered quite a lot of money to put that land into solar panels instead of food. And at the moment, that is very tempting, because they're not making a lot of money out of food production.
I can understand that view, but not on the scale of this. Some of these large schemes are essentially the size of two or three Norfolk farms together. Small parts, well managed, with good public input, carefully linked to the infrastructure that goes with it, is a really creative way of dealing with solar in relation to the agricultural and countryside world.
David Hook from Norfolk CPRE organised the exhibition and has been talking to a lot of the people here who've come to see it.
I'm looking over your shoulder, yeah, yeah. And that view on your screen there has just changed from a mosaic of green fields and woodland, and then it suddenly switches to those fields covered in solar panels.
Yeah.
Aren't you trying to scare people?
Inform people. We're trying to inform people. People need to know what the reality is like. And I think, honestly, once the first one of these mega solar farms is built and people see what it's like when you cover thousands of acres of countryside with solar panels, I think there will be a big wake-up call at that point and a revulsion by people. What are we doing to our countryside?
David Hook from Norfolk CPRE, a Department for Energy Security and Net Zero spokesperson, told us even in the most ambitious scenarios, solar panels would only occupy up to 0.4% of total UK land by 2030, and sits alongside plans to increase its use on rooftops, with around 1.6 million households having installed solar already. Uncertainty about whether a farm will break even, let alone make a profit, is concerning arable farmers, according to Dame Minette Batter's recent report on farm profitability. In it, she outlines the challenges: lower prices for arable products, rising costs of energy and farm machinery, and the suspension of environmental payments under the Sustainable Farming Incentive Scheme, as all contributing to arable farmers questioning whether they should keep growing crops at all. Oliver Collingham farms 300 acres near Nottingham. The summer drought meant he had to irrigate his crops, making them more expensive to grow. He told the BBC he had to rely on other income streams on the farm.
You can almost handle various sort of issues that present themselves throughout a season. But if the price that you're being paid for the crop is below the cost of actually growing it, then there isn't any margin to run a farming business. The cereal side of things has just been so difficult the last few years. It really could become a fool's game for us to carry on blindly, especially with crop prices still being where they are now. The majority of our income is now from those diversified activities, and it has to be, because the agricultural side is just so volatile.
So what are arable farmers deciding to do? Are they turning away from growing food? Helen Plant is Senior Analyst for Cereals and Oilseeds at the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, which has just produced the latest figures for what farmers are planning to plant this year. She told me what they show.
So in broad terms, our figures point to more wheat going in the ground and a bit more oilseed rape as well. I would just say on the oilseed rape, it's quite a large percentage increase, 32% more. But when you look at it in actual number terms, it's just because we come from such a low area for last harvest. I think it was a 42-year low, that even a small increase looks big in percentage terms.
If we look at spring barley, for instance, that's minus 15%.
I think it is a move away from barley, but spring barley in particular. Last year was very challenging for spring crops, but on top of that as well, it's quite a challenging marketing environment for barley. Prices for all crops are lower than last year, particularly for the grains, but there's been some large falls in the sort of extra that is prayed for crops that head into malting. That's probably quite a large factor into people's decisions when they're contemplating what to plant.
When we're looking overall at planting for arable, does it mean that the hectareage of land that's being planted for crops is about the same as last year or not?
I'd say overall, from what this survey showed, it showed an intention for slightly less. And one of the main sort of reasons for that was a bit more going into what we call uncropped arable. So it's a mixture of both rotational fallow, so fields forced to be left bare because of weather reasons, and then land used for sort of agri-environment schemes that require you not to grow a crop. If we compare the last 2 years, so harvest 24 to 25, there was much less deliberately left bare because the weather conditions were better comparatively, but there is still larger amounts of land being committed to agri-environment schemes. Though we don't have the data exactly to show that. We look at the total amount that's not being cropped. It's higher than it has been for at least 10 years now.
Do we actually have figures to show whether the suspension of the SFI has had an impact on what people are planning to do in their fields?
The timing of when the suspension of the scheme came in means it's hard to separate out the factors at the moment. I think we'll see a lot more in data later this year.
We mentioned that Dame Minette Batt has highlighted the fact that arable farmers are feeling very, very uncertain about the future. There's a problem there, isn't there, that farmers don't see arable as a profitable job in itself?
It is very challenging for farmers out there, and people I've spoke to at events over our winter and through our regional team, it is a very challenging environment. While there is a bit of optimism about hopefully having a better year this year in terms of production, there's a long way to go on the final picture yet.
Helen Plant from the AHDB. That's all from us today. I'm Anna Hill. The producer was Rebecca Rooney. Farming Today is a BBC Audio Bristol production.